You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
A young mom seemingly devastated when her husband dies of what appears to be a fentanyl overdose, moved so deeply by her grief, she actually writes a children's book to deal with mourning and grieving. That would be so heartbreaking and touching. If I didn't know, she's charged with his murder. Yes, I'm talking about Corey Richens. Again. Now, believe it or not, after authorities allege that she poisons her husband dead, the father of her children, by giving him a Moscow mule laced with a huge OD of fentanyl. Now, according to reports, what is found in her room? The written script she's trying to cram down the throats of family to paint her as innocent. Ouch. That's terrible when the cops ransack your cell and they find you tampering with witnesses. I hate when that happens. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us here at Crime Stories and on SiriusXM 111. I just want you to hear Corey Richens. I don't get it. She's a successful realtor. She flips these mega mansions and makes all kind of money. She's got a husband who's not cheating, working, supporting the family, beautiful children, beautiful home. Why this? But I want you to hear it from the horse's mouth. Take a listen to Corey Richens describing why she wrote a kid's book. Listen to Crime Online.
I'm new to all of this.
Corey Richens appeared on Good Things Utah, a lifestyle TV program, to talk about her book on grief. She said she's done lots of research to help not only herself, but her children cope with the loss of Eric Richens, husband and father. Richen says what has helped her family are the three C's.
The three C's, you know, connection, continuity, and care.
Richen says it's important to make sure the spirit of your lost loved one is alive in your home by bringing up memories, talking about the person, and doing things that person loved to do.
Okay, yeah. Well, her husband, her dead husband's memory is going to be coming up a lot in her murder trial. But what about this script that has been found in her cell? And wait a minute, before I go any further, Elaine Artavias is with us, senior crime reporter with The Messenger. Isn't it true that the woman has just come forward? I believe she worked for the family, a housekeeper, who sold the Moscow Mule mom, Corey Richens, who allegedly sold her the fentanyl she used to poison her husband. Hasn't that just happened?
Yes, they do have texts between Corey and the housekeeper where Corey is requesting fentanyl, or she's requesting, you know, the heavy drugs, more of. And so that has come out that the housekeeper basically was dropping off drugs at various locations, allegedly for Corey.
That housekeeper's future testimony does not jive with the story that this grief-stricken mom is writing a grief book to help her children to keep the husband's memory alive. You know what? She can say it better than me. Let's listen to more of Corey Richens from Crime Online.
Richens, appearing on Good Things Utah, said it's important to explain to children that just because a parent, in Richens' case, the father, isn't present physically, that doesn't mean their presence isn't with the children.
He's doing these things with us, and he's, you know, here for birthdays, and he's here for Christmas.
Richens says now it's just comforting for her children to know they're not living this life alone.
Dad is still here. It's just in a different way.
Yeah. Murdered, according to prosecutors. I'm about to jump into the ransacking of Corey Richens' cell and finding the script, but I just want you to hear more of Corey Richens speaking out about how much she wanted to console her grieving little children. And just so you know, those children, three little boys, at the time, Carter 9, Ashton 7, and Weston 5. You know what would have really helped them in life? If they still had their dad alive. Okay? But no, that's not going to happen. That said, more, again, from the horse's mouth. Listen to our friends, Crime Online.
Richens says it's the family traditions that are hard for children, such as the parent typically with the child on the first day of school, helping the child cope with what they're facing. She said in her appearance on Good Things Utah that acknowledging those types of things not only gives her peace, but the children as well.
It's been a lot of peace for my kids to, you know, to really remember that in the back of their head, that they're never alone.
My rear end, Dr. Bethany Marshall joining me, renowned psychoanalyst joining us out of L.A. at drbethanymarshall.com. Never alone. According to police, she's the reason that they are alone.
You know, Nancy, sociopaths like her, they do evil things and they try to undo them. They do and they undo. So she kills their father and then she tries to undo it by saying, oh, it's okay. He's always with you. Also, this woman tries to monetize everything. You know, she's always trying to make a buck, always trying to get more money. I think that's one of the motivations for killing her husband, get him out of the way so she can make more money. I think this children's book is just another way to monetize his death.
And you know what? I want to pick up on what Dr. Bethany Marshall just said about the money. Elaine Ottavias is with us, a senior investigative crime reporter with The Messenger. Elaine, I'm about to jump into the manuscript, as they are euphemistically calling it, seized from her jail cell. But there is so much money motive. They had a prenup. She didn't like the prenup. He had a very, very successful business that he built up from scratch. Then there was the issue of flipping this mega mansion. She wanted to buy this mega mansion and then flip it. He opposed it. And then he dies. And within 7 days or so, she flips the mansion and then throws a big party, a boozed up party to celebrate the flip with her husband cold in the grave.
That's right. She repeatedly is acquiring money. In fact, when her husband died, the sister of the husband went to the house and Corey was already taking things out of the safe. There are things missing that cannot be accounted for, that's considered valuable and assets. So over and over, there is a pattern of her trying to get more money.
You know, Donna Kelly is joining me, former Utah senior deputy district attorney, lawyer for Crime Victims Legal Clinic. She also helped form the Utah County Sex Crimes Task Force. Donna Kelly, I know that after my fiance was murdered shortly before our wedding, he was on baseball scholarship, and I wanted one thing. I wanted his baseball that he and I would practice with, throw pitch back and forth. And I still have it. I see it every morning. I'm just curious about your reaction to immediately after her husband's death, she is in the safe getting out whatever assets she can find.
It's very disturbing, Nancy. It is very disturbing. And she had an ongoing dispute, and her husband had an inkling that this was happening and made changes in his will to give things to his family as opposed to Corey Richens. So it all kind of fits together. The puzzle fits together.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Dr. William Maroney, truly a renowned medical examiner and toxicologist. He is the author of American Narcan. and Justin Boardman joining me, former detective in Utah. And of course, that's this jurisdiction where the victim, Eric Richens, young man, 39 years old, the prime of his life, died a very terrible death. But I want to get to what was found in Corey Richens' cell. Listen to our Cut 5, Dave Mack.
The Walk the Dog letter is a 6-page handwritten letter that Corey Richens wrote for her mother. Prosecutors claim the letter instructs her mother and brother to give false testimony in the case, according to a motion filed in court. In the letter, Richens wrote, quote, "This comes down to jealousy, money, and Eric's partying that they don't want to acknowledge, and sadly, an accidental overdose," unquote. The prosecutors have asked the judge to restrict Richens from further engaging in witness tampering by restricting her from contacting her mother and brother. Defense attorney Sky Lazaro filed a brief accusing the prosecutors of breaching a gag order in the case when they filed the letter titled Walk the Dog as part of their motion.
Okay, Elaine Ottavias, tell me everything about the so-called Walk the Dog letter.
The Walk the Dog letter, first of all, is named that because at the top of the letter, in huge type, all caps, she wrote Walk the Dog. I think you can sort of take from that that she was giving instructions to whoever this letter was written for. The state alleges that she was writing it to her mom with instructions of what to say. Hence, the state is alleging witness tampering. But this letter really sort of talks about, you know, it's almost like this what if, you know, and talking about what the drugs were for and how this accidentally happened. But in a conversation that she had with her brother, she's alleging that it's part of a fiction mystery novel.
Okay, what? Repeat.
She says that it's part of a fiction mystery novel.
I'm so happy. Elaine Ottavias, you just made me a very happy former prosecutor. So they are addressing the Walk the Dog 6-page letter that was found in her jail cell. And by the way, apparently when they came to and they found that, she went into some kind of a seizure. Never had a seizure before in her life, we've been told. But when they found that 6-page letter in her jail cell, she apparently suffered a seizure. Richens, the Moscow Mule mom, claims the letter instructing her mom to say her husband OD'd on drugs from Mexico, claims it is for a book she planned to write. How is that part of a book she planned to write, Elaine Ottavias? What does that have to do with the book? What's the plot of the book?
Well, here's what's interesting. So the they released a transcript that she had between her and her brother. And in that conversation that she had with her brother, she explains that this, she's written a 65-page novel. And it's all about, you know, from the detention hearing and what happens. And then she gets out of jail and she and her father go to Mexico where they're dealing with a ranch and a cartel. She's saying this, that this is part of a 65-page novel. But that the jail deputies, they pulled out this 6-page letter. She's claiming that this letter is actually part of a bigger novel and that they're picking and choosing. And on top of it all, she also claims that she wrote a letter on top of it saying that this is part of, you know, that events have been changed, but based on true, you know, situations that have happened to her. And what kills me is that it was hidden inside an LSAT book.
Law school admissions test manual. Now, the damning letter appears to instruct someone to tell Corey Richens' brother, Ronnie, to say he had been talking to the dead husband about his trips to Mexico and that the dead husband revealed he had been given pain pills and fentanyls from workers on the ranch. Okay. Let's hear some more. Take a listen to investigative reporting team from crimeonline.com.
KUTV says in the Walk the Dog letter, Corey Richens allegedly wants her brother to say Eric Richens told him he got pain pills and fentanyl from Mexico through workers at a ranch. She allegedly points out how Ronnie's testimony could make the connection of Eric and drugs. In the letter, Corey Richens allegedly says the testimony, quote, can be short and to the point, but has to be done, unquote. Richens also tells her mother to pass information to her brother in person, telling her mother her home and phone could be bugged.
So pass the information verbally and in person because the home and phone could be bugged. Let's get to the crux of this entire scenario, and that is the gruesome death, the horrible death of a very loving 39-year-old dad who was working like a dog to support Corey Richens and their mega mansion and their three little boys as young as age 5. This is what happened. Take a listen to our friends at Crime Online.
According to court documents, Corey Richens called police to their Utah home where her husband, Eric Richens, was found dead in the early morning hours of March 4th, 2022. Investigators said Corey had given Eric a drink, a Moscow Mule, before he went to bed. She then spent part of the night with one of her three children who had a nightmare. According to court documents, in her written statement the night of his death, she said when she returned to their bedroom at approximately 3 a.m., he was cold to the touch, and she called 911. It was later determined that Eric had 5 times the lethal dose of fentanyl in his system, which officials said had been ingested orally.
Joining me right now is the world's premier authority on fentanyl and fentanyl ingestion and fentanyl OD, and also how to revive someone from a fentanyl overdose, Dr. William Maroney, the author of American Narcan, Naloxone and Heroin Fentanyl-Associated Mortality. This guy, this doctor, is using his medical degree to help people with fentanyl addiction to the point he has invested his own money and all his years of education and experience to create a traveling mobile unit to help those addicted to fentanyl. Dr. William Maroney, this whole story stinks to high heaven, but first of all, explain what happens when you get a fentanyl OD. What happens? What do you experience?
Well, however you ingest it, if you swallow it, if you snort it, if you inject it, whatever happens, it goes to your brain, goes in your blood, goes to your brain, and it goes to a place in your brain that controls your breathing. And slowly, you breathe shallow, infrequent, less and less, and you suffocate, you go through asphyxia, you lose all your oxygen and your heart starts pumping and you stop breathing, and it's got to be one of the scariest things in the world. It's like being locked in a tomb, darkness. You can't get out, and your body doesn't work, and your muscles don't work, and you get weaker and weaker. And eventually, if you can be reached with Narcan before your final breath, Narcan can get in your system and push the fentanyl off your brain, kind of like pulling fuzzies off your sweater. And you start breathing again. But if you don't have the Narcan, you die. And you stop breathing in 2 to 3 minutes, and you have 6 minutes before there's irreversible damage in your brain. We get a lot of people at the hospital that have been fentanyl overdoses, and the families keep them around for a couple of days. They keep them on ventilators, hope they're coming back, but they're brain dead. So you really need that intervention early. You need all pain and addiction patients in America should have Narcan in their home. And you know what the honest God truth is? Everybody with small children should have Narcan in their home for accidents, because this fentanyl stuff is everywhere. It's on dollar bills. It's in other drugs. It could be coming out of grocery stores or things that you touch at the gas station. We're in a fentanyl crisis. This is not an opioid crisis. Fentanyl is so far out of control, it's equivalent to a weapon of mass destruction.
Dr. Maroney, say I had a fentanyl overdose. Have you ever been asleep and you're trying to wake up, but you can't wake up? Or would it be like being inside a coffin and little by little, you know you're dying and you run out of air? And talk to me and regular people talk, Dr. Maroney. I mean, what would Eric Richens experience?
All of the people I know that have come to me that have overdosed on fentanyl, but they got the Narcan, they came back, and now they're in treatment with medication-assisted treatment, they all say there's a rush of heat in the body as the fentanyl goes through the bloodstream, and then slowly you lose all consciousness. And what you described was sleep paralysis, where you're kind of in bed and you can think, but you can't move. Sometimes you can't talk. Not being able to breathe is got to be the scariest thing in the world. I would rather be cut in half and smashed with a car and shot 100 times and lit on fire than not being able to breathe. If you can't breathe, nothing else matters. And the idea that somebody would put fentanyl, the toxic dose of fentanyl is 2 milligrams. That's equivalent to 12 to 14 granules out of a salt shaker at the breakfast diner. If you shake salt on the table and you can get 10 or 12 or 14 granules, that's enough fentanyl to kill you. And a full teaspoon is enough to kill everybody in the room.
Well, I got to tell you, Dr. Maroney, I saw reports where I believe it was a lady cop was on a crime scene and she nearly died because the report was she touched fentanyl unwittingly. And I thought, wow, that doesn't ring true to me because I've in court handled so many drugs with my bare hands and you know nothing ever happened. But it actually is true, isn't it?
It is. And it is the amount of fentanyl that touches the skin and gets absorbed. It's happened in the deputies in the surrounding counties around us. All the deputies try to carry 2 Narcans. One is for patients or, you know, when they're chasing people down or drug overdoses. And one is for their partners. We have to have Narcan and even gloves. Sometimes you got to be careful because those masks are a joke with fentanyl. They don't stop fentanyl. But you know, people touching crime scenes, turning envelopes over.
So that is what is being discussed here, that Eric Richens, the dad of 3, OD'd on fentanyl. But now, what about a Moscow mule? Justin Borman, just in time, former detective in this jurisdiction, Utah West Valley City PD. Now, Boardman Training and Consultant Justin Boardman, what's a Moscow Mule?
Well, a Moscow Mule is one of my favorite beverages, but it would be vodka and ginger beer with a twist of lime.
Now, ginger beer, we all had at Universal in Harry Potter Land. It's very tangy. I love it. It's not actually beer. Is it beer? Because children can get it, maybe. It's more ginger than anything else. And ginger has a very strong taste, which would conceal fentanyl. I mean, yes, no, Dr.
Absolutely.
Maroney. Yes, no. Does fentanyl taste like anything?
Fentanyl's bitter. You need to have some strong, pungent, sour, sweet flavoring.
Like ginger beer. Okay, so Justin Boardman, the working theory, I mean, you're the detective. This is your jurisdiction. The theory is that she put fentanyl, a huge OD amount, into the ginger beer. Yes, no.
Yes. And that's the theory, that it was taken orally and was hidden in the Moscow Mule that he had that evening and passed from.
We're never going to know if she handed him that glass or if he just drank it on his own. But That's when you fall back on circumstantial evidence. Take a listen to this.
Evidence gathered revealed Corey claimed she didn't have access to her phone that night. She said it was left on the charger by her bed while she was in another room tending a sick child. However, a data dump shows Richen's phone was in use during the time her husband was dying and that sent messages had been deleted. Additional evidence showed Richens was in contact with a drug dealer in Ogden leading up to her husband's death. The legal documents state she received both hydrocodone pills and fentanyl from the dealer. The claim was that the drugs were intended for a client experiencing back pain, even specifically asking for, quote, the Michael Jackson stuff, unquote, meaning fentanyl. Information from the autopsy report determined Eric Richens died from an overdose of fentanyl, 5 times the lethal dosage.
Elaine Onavias joining us, senior investigative crime reporter with The Messenger. Elaine, again, thank you for being with us. You know, it's the cover-up is deadly in this case. Deleting text messages. My phone can barely work. I've got so many emails and text messages on it. I never think to delete anything. I mean, there are messages on there from 2015 and 16. Yes. So the fact that you suddenly have the urge to delete a bunch of texts and emails, which of course anybody can get from the cloud. But that said, explain to me, Elaine Onavias. She said her phone was in a different room that night of all nights. She went and slept with her boys while her husband died, killed over in the other room. But yet when authorities searched, they found out the phone was actually in use the entire time and that those particular texts had been deleted. Do I have that right? Could you explain that, please, Elaine?
Yes, I think, you know, a lot of times, especially, you know, with all the shows we see and all these previous cases, we see, you know, before, you know, they tried to take care of everything. You know, they have Googled, you know, how do I clean up this or whatever. And somehow they always forget about the phone. The phone has the ability to be tracked because everyone has like Find My Phone or, you know, the cell towers. They can see movement. They can, you know, when investigators, they have forensic investigators, when they subpoena your phone and they start going through it, they can see when it turned on, when it moved, all of these things. And so I think, you know, we will find out more about it in court when forensic investigators explain what they found. But thus far, we know that the phone was in use. So, which puts a crack in her story already.
A big crack. Because if you got your phone, you can call 911 immediately. And does that mean she wasn't really even in the children's room when she's right there watching the husband die? Donna Kelly joining me, former Utah senior deputy district attorney, this jurisdiction. Donna Kelly, the deleting the texts and the emails, the phone movements, it reminds me significantly of the Alex Murdoch double murder prosecution where he was charged in the murder of his wife, Maggie, and son, Paul. The forensic evidence showed that he was at the dog kennels where his wife and son were murdered, riddled with bullets, because of his cell phone and because of another cell phone video. It placed him there. The phone then followed him to his vehicle. The phone traveled with him and his wife Maggie's phone. Then her phone is thrown out of the car, linked with the navigation system in his vehicle. I believe it was a Suburban. It shows every move he made, from letting the windows up and down to the speed to the ignition turn, you name it. Technology is a very powerful tool in the prosecutor's arsenal, Donna Kelly.
Absolutely. And the reason that juries love this kind of evidence is it's very objective. It doesn't have a bias. It doesn't have an agenda. It's just there. And so that evidence is very powerful to a jury. And it also shows the consciousness of guilt that the person has, for example, in deleting messages, you know, immediately, that sort of thing. So it can show, you know, the movement and the messages that went in and out, but it can also show consciousness of your own guilt.
Mm-hmm. You're right. So the state will then begin looking at other circumstantial evidence, evidence contemporaneous around the time of the death. Take a listen to this.
After Eric Ridgen's death, Corey Ridgen's hired a locksmith to open Eric's safe. Between $125,000 and $165,000 was reportedly inside. When Eric Ridgen's sister told her sister-in-law she didn't have the rights to those funds, Corey Ridgen's punched her. Eric Ridgen's had also opened a living trust and placed the trust as his life insurance beneficiary instead of Corey. We now know Corey had purchased at least 4 life insurance policies on Eric Ridgen's with death benefits of over $1 million.
Okay, Dr. Bethany Marshall, a renowned psychoanalyst, joining us out of Beverly Hills. I tell you one thing, if my husband David Lynch goes out and takes 4 life insurance policies out on me, N-O, we're splitting up at that moment and I'm taking the twins, period. He can have everything else except those twins. 4 life insurance policies? What?
You know, Nancy, when I listen to this story, so I think of Corey Richens as suffering what I affectionately term the Casey Anthony syndrome. Every lie, every maneuver, every motive is so flagrantly transparent. And from a mental health perspective, she's probably suffering from what we call cluster B. Cluster B is when you have sociopathy.
Are you saying cluster?
Cluster.
Okay.
Cluster, like a cluster bomb.
Okay.
So when you have sociopathy, borderline personality disorder, and potentially bipolar.
I don't even know what you're saying. Blah, 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 blah. She's greedy. She wants money. What are you talking about? Cluster what?
Okay, so sociopathy. They lie, they con, they manipulate, they have parasitic lifestyle. So there you have the money motive. Borderline personality disorder. There's clinging and rejecting behavior. They can plot and plan forever. Bipolar, where they get in such a certain type of mood where they feel no guilt or consciousness or remorse. So she has all these things swirling around, and that's why the story just gets crazier and crazier. And like Casey Anthony, everyone from the outside looking in can say, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie. How can she not know that we know she's lying? And that's what happens with these kinds of personalities. They don't see in themselves what we see in them. And that's why the family went over to check the safe. That's why they caught her, is that they had been observing this for a long, long time.
Well, there's more to the money motive. And I can't wait for Dr. Maroney to jump in on how many dead bodies he's autopsied that are dead because of money motive. Listen to this.
Investigators say Eric Ridgen's was looking into a divorce. He had recently changed his will and life insurance from his wife to his sister. 2 friends told detectives that Eric Ridgen's was worried Corey would kill him for the money and wanted to ensure that his kids were taken care of financially. Even as Corey Ridgen's was promoting her children's book about grief on local television, investigators were looking into the couple's troubled past.
I've watched that interview a million times and never once did this woman shed a tear. Dr. William Maroney, renowned medical examiner, the love of money, the root of all evil. What do you think about that, Maroney?
It's really a good reason. It's at the top of the list. Money is, it's like worse than love and infidelity because you can just enjoy it all by yourself. It's sinful, and it's in every culture, and it's in every country, and whether it's male or female, it's always about the money. And what I'm really worried about, somebody this reckless, people will reproduce this. And what happens, fentanyl is so dangerous. She could have accidentally killed her children.
You're right. The 3 little boys in the same home.
Oh.
What if one of them had taken a sip of that Moscow Mule?
Even if they would have touched fentanyl on the counter, or there was fentanyl dust and something like that, is just to poison somebody with fentanyl when there's small children in the room. That's insane.
Fentanyl dust. Remember, Maroney, Dr. Maroney, we just covered the case of a little 1-year-old boy who died in a daycare.
Yes.
From fentanyl
in New York
dust. He breathed.
Yes.
It in. The daycare was a front for dope. He breathed in, we think, or touched fentanyl.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, here's the kicker. This is not the first time, according to LA law enforcement, that Corey Richens tried to murder her husband. Listen to in the investigative reporting team at Crime Stories.
Valentine's Day, 2022. Eric Richens becomes violently ill after suffering an allergic reaction after having dinner with his wife of 9 years, Corey. He breaks out in hives, can't breathe, passes out after using his son's EpiPen and taking Benadryl. When Eric wakes up, he calls his business partner, Cody Wright, to let him know what has just happened. Then, without Corey knowing, Eric changes the beneficiary of his will and his power of attorney, replacing his wife, Corey, with his sister. Legal paperwork suggests that Eric believes Corey might kill him for the money, and he wants his children to be financially secure.
Kind of reminds me of cult mom Lori Vallow. Her husband was afraid that she would kill him, so he changed a lot of his financial setup away from her, and she killed him anyway, had him killed anyway, not knowing that she was no longer his beneficiary. That said, this reminds me of another incredible case. And, you know, I couldn't make this up. Do you remember the name Dahlia DiPolito? Reportedly a former escort who marries the victim. She sets up a hit. She sets up a shooting hit to kill him and get money and a townhome. But, of course, she sets it up with an undercover agent. And he's got it all on tape, planning to kill her husband, Dahlia DiPolito. So, apparently, she tried to kill him before in a poison Starbucks latte of some sort. Didn't work. So, she tries again. According to him, he lives. The undercover agent stops the hit, but they pretend to her. This is a sting. That they're coming to tell her her husband has been attacked and he's dead. Now, Meryl Streep, I love you, lady, but move over because Dahlia DiPolito may beat you out for your next Oscar. Listen to Dahlia DiPolito reacting to news her husband is dead.
I'm Sergeant Ramsey. I'm the one that called you. Thank you for coming. I'm sorry to call you. Listen, we had a report of a disturbance at your house and there were shots fired. Is your husband Michael? Okay, I'm sorry to tell you, ma'am. He's been killed.
No.
He's been killed, ma'am. I'm sorry.
No, he's not. Listen. No. No.
Try to calm down.
No.
Listen, right now, what we need to get you to the station.
No.
We need to get you to our police station.
I
can't let you in, man. We have to do our job. If you want us to find this killer, okay? We need you to calm down. I'm going to need you to go with these detectives, okay? Does he have enemies? Is there anyone that would want to hurt him? Okay, who would want to hurt him? Witnesses said they saw a black male running from me. I can't let you see him, ma'am. Ma'am, I cannot do this right now. Ma'am, I can't do it. Detective Yopi, I need you to take her to the station. I can't. Ma'am, go with these detectives. If you want to help your husband, okay? If you want to help your husband, you need to go to the station with these gentlemen and tell us everything you know about who he knows, who he's connected to. Don't worry, we've already taken care of dogs with animal control for right now. Everything's under control.
There's more. But I just listen to that all day. Did you hear that, Donna Kelly? That was Dahlia DiPolito when she's told her husband's dead. He's not dead. Later at the police station, they're questioning her and he walks by. He goes, hi, you tried to kill me. But in this case, now we're getting this very long letter where obviously Corey Richens, Moscow Mule mom, is trying to convince her family to lie about her husband traveling to Mexico to get these drugs.
Yes, that evidence is going to be explosive and very powerful in front of the jury. And compounding the actual letter is also the evidence that she's trying to manufacture excuses for writing it. She says at first it was written for her lawyer's benefit, so it's privileged. Well, that's obviously a lie, because right in the letter, she refers to her lawyer by name. You know, tell my brother to go talk to the name of her lawyer. So obviously it's not written for the lawyer. But also then now she had to concoct a new lie, because that one didn't fly. So you have not only the letter with the instructions of how to lie, but you have her excuses for writing it, which compounds, again, shows her consciousness of her own guilt.
While she's having some type of a seizure, guards search her cell, find a copy of a bombshell letter instructing her own mother to fuel conspiracy theories that her dead husband had a drug problem and overdosed. He was at work every day working, trying to pay for that mega mansion they were living in. In the letter, she reportedly asked the mother to get her brother to concoct a story. The husband, a year before his death, secretly told the brother he would get pain pills and fentanyl from a ranch hand in Mexico. She wrote that she would also say her husband asked the caterer, an alleged drug dealer, to hook him up with more, when actually that housekeeper caterer says that she, Corey Richens, is the one wanting the money. So this is an incredible development in the case. And oh, by the way, I don't know if you guys knew this, but Justin Boardman, in the Dahlia DiPolito case, she then claimed something similar to what Moscow Mule Mom is saying. She claimed that was a script. It was all a setup. They were all acting for a reality show. The way Corey Richens is saying, oh, that letter telling everybody what to say about my husband being a dope head, that was part of a manuscript. That's the ticket. A manuscript of a book I was writing. It's not going to work.
No, that is a lot of drama, if you will. It also reminds me of a case that was investigated a couple cubicles over from my own, and that was the Susan and Josh Powell case, where Susan had put a letter in her work file at work that if she disappeared or died, that Josh probably did it. It's very interesting to me to see these sort of people get these intuitions that they might get offed by their significant other, like he did as well.
He really did. And you can read the entire letter at crimeonline.com, but it goes on to say, if you could read it, it says, I need Eric. Eric told Romney he gets pain pillers from Mexico. You may have to testify to this. Romney should have gotten text from Eric talking about getting high. I mean, it goes on and on describing what would help her if they said it on the stand.
Nancy, can I jump in?
Yes, please, jump in.
Well, you know, not only is she witness tampering, but this is one more example of criminals embroiling their families in their crimes. They don't just take themselves down, they take everyone else down around them.
I mean, if you read it, it goes on to talk about how you may have to testify to this. Maybe something like he gets high every night and won't help take care of the kids. It just goes on and on and on.
Remember Casey Anthony accused her brother and her father of molesting her, and you know, all these things, there's this thoughtless attitude. There's this callous disregard for family members. So the family members are used just as much as she used her husband. She used the press. She used her own children without any thought to the consequences.
This case is heading to trial. Isn't that true, Elaine Ottavius?
Yes. I mean, that's the goal. But there are so many more hearings that are coming up that, I mean, the next one, they're actually going to argue whether it should be dismissed. That's what her attorney filed based on this letter.
Mm-hmm. That's straight out of the defense playbook. Remember, they just tried that in the Brian Koberger case. It didn't work. We wait as this trial unfolds.
Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.